Support for today's show comes from Deloitte. What does the future look like? By melding business acumen and innovative technology, Deloitte can help you build the future only you can imagine. They can help engineer solutions for your business reality today and your vision for tomorrow, to get you to a world where you don't just dream it, you build it. See how you can engineer advantage with Deloitte at deloitte.com/us/engineeringadvantage.
Support for this episode comes from The Current Report. From data privacy to the future of TV, retail media, and beyond, the world of digital marketing is constantly in flux. So how can you keep up? Well, The Current Report is there for you. Each week, marketing leaders on the cutting edge give you the latest insight. So if it's creating a buzz, they'll be talking about it. Subscribe to The Current Report wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. This is Pivot from New York Magazine and the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Kara Swisher.
And I'm Scott Galloway. And Kara, I am just so excited about the timing of this anti-mask movement in St. Patrick's Day. Because I don't know about you, but I find that people make really good decisions on St. Patrick's Day.
God.
Really good decisions. As a matter of fact, I do think that when the people who don't want to take the vaccine, I just call that natural selection.
I think
that makes sense.
Why do this at the end? Like, it's just masks. Just open some stuff, sure. But like,
it's evolutionary progress.
Close. Hey.
There are just some red flags for all the ladies
out
there.
Word to the ladies. What?
There's some red flags that say this individual should not find purchase in your womb, meaning you should not procreate with this purchase. Specifically, if anyone ever mentions cash back in a credit card, you don't want to mate with that person. If somebody talks about how they're into their magic, if someone
magic.
Is saying they're going to get the real
I
estate
like
license once they stop promoting that club, that just means you shouldn't. And also, if they're really into St. Patrick's Day, that means do not have children with that person.
Oh,
do
God,
not have children
Jesus.
With that person. And anyone also who in any way says, you know, I'm not going to take a vaccine, that means that branch of DNA should not grow leaves.
Like, honestly, it's like I literally think of like our founding fathers. I'm like they wore masks. They had a vaccine. They had issues.
Jesus Christ, can you get over this?
It's they gotta get.
Can you get over this?
I cannot. I just
my
don't.
mom had to carry around, or my mom's father, I should say, had to carry around this weird mask. Gas mask with ears on it in London as the Messerschmitts were raining hell down. They had to carry around this ridiculously clunky mask in case a gas alarm went off. But no, to wear a cloth mask into Walmart is tyranny.
Tyranny.
Anyways, Governor Abbott, get your head out of your ass.
Yeah.
The great state of Texas deserves better.
Yeah, I feel bad for the people of Texas. Like, even the ones that are cheering this on, I feel bad. You're stupid. Like, be stupid, but don't be stupid. Anyway, let me just contrast it with Dolly Parton, who's our vaccine queen.
She's awesome.
She did an astonishing, she took the song Jolene and sang vaccine. I'm not going to sing like Dolly. She's amazing. Rebecca will put it in.
It goes, vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine. Because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late.
I think she should like tape the song vaccine in the Jolene, since she wrote Jolene, and then release it and give the money to something. Like, but she's already given money because she helped finance the Moderna COVID
to Vanderbilt,
the COVID-19 vaccine research. Yeah. She finally got she waited in line. Like, I love Dolly Parton.
Yeah,
I want Dolly Parton
to
run our entire friggin' country.
Yeah.
She writes songs. She's a great entrepreneur. She's kind. She's like, she listens to every side. It seems like everybody likes her. So I just I love Dolly Parton. And speaking of vaccines, President Biden announced there'll be enough vaccines for every adult in the U.S. by the end of May. And by the way, district government announced that it's changing to their system because it had so ill-served its citizens. So now it's a two-step system where you register and then you don't have to do this sort of Hunger Games vaccination thing, which is going to be great. It looks like things are, you know, I got to say, I give the government a hard time, but they moved quickly and fixed the problem, or trying to fix the problem, so more people get vaccines in their arms. So a fast-moving government is always a good thing. And this looks like we will be getting, more people will be getting these vaccines by the end of May. So you should all go back and listen to Tuesday's Pivot episode interview with Andy Slavitt of the White House. He's a White House senior advisor to the COVID response team. So those are all, you know, masks, you're just going to make people sicker, but get a vaccine then. Just get vaccines in your arms. I don't know what to say. If you really need to do that with a mask, get yourself a vaccine that is coming to you much sooner. So what else is going on? I broke Twitter Spaces yesterday. Did you hear about that?
Say more.
Well, Twitter has the Spaces, which is a competitor to Clubhouse. It's actually very good. I have to say, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. And I like it because it's, everyone's like, oh, Clubhouse is one. I'm like, but all my interest graph is on Twitter. And like, it attracted, I don't know, 1,000 people. It was really something. And I got, what happened is I went on the first place. This was one of the, doing one of my times.
Are you cheating on me with Spaces?
I am.
You didn't even tell me about Spaces.
You on Spaces maybe soon. I want, we need to, you and I need to go. That will be good. Yeah. And we can like cut people off. That's my favorite part.
I'm hoping it's a Clubhouse killer, but I don't know any more.
It's a Clubhouse competitor, I would say. And what I actually really like it. I really like it. It's you go in and then everybody shows up. It tweets out so your followers can see it, and you can just let certain people speak, people you invite to speak, or you can let everyone speak, or just everyone who follows you speak. That can be really noisy, and only 10 people can speak at once. I think the first 10 people get there. But what I did is I let nobody speak, and then I clicked on and made them speakers, essentially, as they had questions, when they made requests. And then every now and then, someone I saw in the room, I made them a speaker, and they spoke. And so—
Did you have a topic?
Well, interesting, because I broke Twitter. What happened is they had an update, and everybody could only hear my part of the conversation and not
generally
the questioners.
Generally, I find anything you're involved in, most people can just hear Kara. Just hear Kara.
Except in this show. I'm going to do a data thing.
That's good. That's good humor.
How many minutes you talk versus me? I would bet you would win on that. We're going to do that. Rebecca, get on it. So anyway, let me finish with Twitter Spaces. So anyway, you go in there and you talk, and people ask the best questions. And what happened is Kayvon, who runs product for Twitter for many years now, came on and explained what happened. And it was great. And then I asked him dozens of questions about about Spaces and about product innovation at Twitter and about subscriptions. He talked a lot about subscriptions and explained it even more, which was really great. And then people asked him questions. And so the head of product in Twitter was answering questions with me poking at him, but with people asking great questions about the product and other products at Twitter. So it was great.
That sounds cool.
It was fun. It's really well done. And I really like this audio thing. It's very intimate. It's great for people with fans. They give you enough tools that you can cut people off. And if they go crazy, nobody did. Everyone acted great. Within an audio setting, there was not craziness. And he did acknowledge all the problems that could come, like a white supremacist group or someone who, the host being crazy and stuff like that. And so we talked about that. So it was great. So you and I are going to go on Twitter Spaces.
I'm excited. Well, the really exciting news is that Twitter, and we've been advocating this for a long time. By the way, I spoke to a very senior executive at Twitter. They all call me late at night, if they call me late at night, no one will find out about it. And said that the product development team at Twitter feels more heat than they ever have. Well, it's about time. Anyways, them going into subscription is obviously a gangster move. I think they've shown more product mojo in the last 90 days than they've shown in the last 5 years. And what's really exciting is that Twitter is going vertical in content and has purchased Tidal, which is a genius move.
Yes. So explain that to people. Now, I just was reading Jack's long explanation of it.
Well, first off, you fell for it. It wasn't Twitter that bought it. It was Square.
Excuse me, which, by the way,
makes no fucking sense.
I'm sorry. Okay.
And indicates that Jack Dorsey, guess which child he likes more? Oh, if
Square.
Twitter had bought Tidal and gone vertical with music, my understanding is Tidal has something to do with music.
Yeah, they do.
It would have created more momentum. That Twitter stock would have gone up. But no, he wants it to go to where 91% of his wealth is. And supposedly they're going
to
integrate Cash App and payments.
I hadn't even thought of Twitter should have bought it. You're right.
100%. What the fuck is Square doing buying Tidal?
Would you like his explanation? I'm just going to read it.
Yeah, what is it?
All right. He asked, why would a music streaming company and a financial services company join forces?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very multi-part tweet. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It comes down to the simple idea of finding new ways for artists to support their work. New ideas are found at intersections, and we believe there's a compelling one between music and the economy. Making the economy work for artists is similar to what Square has done for sellers. So that's the idea. And so he says, given what Square is able to do as sellers of all sizes, individuals through Cash App, we believe we can now work for artists to see the same success for them and us. We're going to start small and focus on the most critical needs of artists and growing their fan bases. Square created ecosystems and tools for sellers and individuals, and we'll do the same for artists. We'll work entirely new listening experience to bring fans closer together, simple integrators and merchandise sales, modern collaboration tools, and new complementary revenue streams. I still don't understand.
Yeah, we'll pass the beard oil and the edibles, brother. I mean, literally, that is just fucking ridiculous. First off, let's look at parts of that. Parts of that make sense.
Okay.
We want to expand.
It does make a little sense.
We want to expand the fan base. I know. Right. Let's find a social network with 180 million people and promote that original content as a means of differentiating our social network and mm-hmm. also bringing attention to the artists. Oh, wait, but we're going to do that on a financial, on a payment app?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this indicates a couple things. Mm-hmm. One, it indicates that Jack has the mother of all favorite children, and literally Twitter mm-hmm. is his second family.
I
mean, it's like every other weekend he'll swing by with a skateboard and a shitty Christmas tree and pay the rent for mom, right?
Sounds like a story that may have happened to someone named Scott, but yeah, little Scotty. Yeah.
You know, I expose myself and you jab.
I just wanted to say.
And by the way, Jack Dorsey is like the mother of all star fuckers. This was a $300 million bar tab to hang out with Jay-Z. Mm. This just doesn't make any sense. Okay. This does not.
So, but it would make sense to go to Twitter.
My testosterone therapy is like exploding. I'm so angry all the time. I'm literally so aggressive and so angry.
It would have been a good thing for Twitter is what you're saying. This would have been
It would have been genius for Twitter, for God's sakes. Go vertical into content, proprietary content. When did Spotify's stock take off? When they did the Joe Rogan deal. When did Netflix stock take off? When they dropped a full season of House of Cards? If Twitter goes serious into content, anything mm-hmm. like this, that day they get to go shopping on the market's credit card. The, mm-hmm. the stock will appreciate by more than the acquisition
card.
Price.
That's a great way of putting it. You know, it's interesting. You're going to be furious when Square buys CNN.
Oh, God, don't even say that. Don't even say that.
We're going to link the news with a payment system, subscription, blah, 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 blah. And also I want to hang out with Anderson Cooper. So go ahead, Tony.
Literally, I think the thing that makes you happiest in the world is your little girl. A close second is when you trigger me. Be honest. I never hear you laugh like when you trigger me. If Anderson Cooper ends up working at Square, I'm going on strike. I'm literally going on strike. I'm finding a union.
You've got to save Andy. You've got to run in there and grab him and run out of the burning building. Oh, my God.
If Jack Dorsey ruins what Ando and I have, I will never forgive him. I will never forgive him.
You got to get Ando on here. You know that?
You know, I don't want to abuse our friendship like that. He and I are close. He doesn't know that yet, but he and I are close.
Well, anyway, this was an interesting deal. I agree with you. I see their explanation. No.
What?
I don't think it's interesting. I think it should have gone to Twitter. I was
right.
That's why I said Twitter, because I thought, of course, Twitter.
I said it and you believed it, because why? Because it makes sense.
I know. It's Square. I forgot.
Jesus Christ.
It is kind of something. Yeah. Payment, they could have just used a Square system on Twitter. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they could just been a vendor. I don't know.
Literally, what is going on? Seriously, Coinbase is acquiring Maroon 5. What's next? What the fuck is next?
Speaking of bands, the Kings of Leon, we got to get to our big stories in a second, is releasing its first album as an NFT. We're going to talk about NFTs on Monday, which is this non-fungible tokens. Explain what they are so that we can get our people ready for discussing them.
The honest answer is I don't know. The only thing I'll say, and I'm trying to understand crypto, I'm like the guy who's been dragged into liking crypto just as I've been dragged into admiring Elon Musk. Like the interesting, Bitcoin is non-fungible. The beauty of Bitcoin is it can't be, it's not malleable. It's a dollar. You know what a dollar is. You get a dollar. You know what you can use it for. You can't counterfeit it. If you do, the CIA shows up, which interestingly enough, the CIA is actually charged with crimes around counterfeiting, which I didn't know in addition to protecting the president. But these NFTs are specifically, I've been learning a lot about Ethereum, these notion of smart contracts and things you put on top of the blockchain for artists or to, you know, you as a condition of payment, you say you have to put this money into escrow. And if I'm getting NFTs wrong, which I'm sure I am, and I will hear immediately on Twitter how wrong I got it.
We're going to do research over the
week. There's this kind of what I'll call this next version of crypto that where everyone is starting to understand a little bit Bitcoin, but this notion of placing smart contracts and non-fungible tokens that so this was a long-winded way of saying I don't know, Kara.
What it is essentially you get value. You have you buy these tokens, you get certain value. In the case of the Kings of Leon, you get special seats or releases, or which is interesting because I think we really need to talk about this because this was the idea around super followers at Twitter, this idea that there's some payment, and we took Kayvon and I talked about that, that there's some payment that you, there's some content that you make that's special for only people. And so it's this idea that you invest and then they give you things. There's value. So it's putting value on these tokens.
So cat meme just went for $300,000 as an NFT, I think.
Yeah, you get special cat memes, though. You get some value. And what value is to people is different. You know what I mean? What's valuable to you and what's valuable to me are so different.
Oh, you think?
Yes.
You think?
Yes. You know, like, so anyway, so what is the value? And so we're going to be talking about this more because it's really interesting because there's all these different payment things going on, like creators getting paid, you know, figuring out monetization around things like these clubhouses or Twitter spaces, around Cameo, around Substack. There's all these different. And it's all about what Scott was talking about, which was Rundle, the recurring revenue bundle. I think we should start Rundle Coin.
Well, you know, there's definitely going to be, I'm just waiting. And by the way, the most underreported business story of the last 30 days, Amazon is experimenting with a cryptocurrency, a
they
coin
should.
South of the border in Mexico.
They should.
No one's talking about it.
We've been waiting for that. Like, what are they? And what is the value? I mean, in a weird way, Prime is kind of an NFT. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you get what you get out of it.
I like the hushed tone to connote some sort of insight there.
I was just thinking. I got to think about it more. I'm not intelligent enough on it. So let's move to something I actually am intelligent on, which is Google. Here is the big story. Google is announcing that it will no longer sell ads based on specific web browsing data. Ah, interesting. There you have that is interesting because one of their executives has a company that they started called Neva that is getting funding that has been getting more and more funding. Starting next year, the company will stop using and investing in tracking technologies that identify web users as they move from site to site. This is seriously shaking up the digital ad economy. Google accounted for 52% of last year's global digital ad spending at $292 billion. Google announced last year it would remove third-party cookies in 2022. Of course, this all comes among increased antitrust strategy. I think this is a prophylactic, as you often say, against a big tech giant. Late last year, the Department of Justice announced a lawsuit against the company, alleging the company has a monopoly on search, and obviously targeting is an important part of that. Tracking technologies is. Facebook also announced it would be lifting a ban on political ads in the United States. Meanwhile, they're over here. We're back to trouble. So what do you think? What do you think about this? This is a big deal. And they're leaning into privacy.
Really rivals Google's concern over privacy as Facebook's support of journalism. I think those two things are it's like when I go on boards, I always walk in thinking I know what's going on. And what I always find, and this is a good lesson, and it's something I've struggled with my whole life, and I'm finally trying to acknowledge when I go into new environments, and I think there's a lesson here for young people. That is, generally speaking, when you go into a new environment, you find out that you're not as smart as you thought and they're not as dumb as you'd hoped. And when Facebook claims that their actions reflect a concern or support for journalism and Google attempts to fashion this or spin this as a concern for privacy, well, guess what? We're not that fucking stupid. This is, or the way I perceive this, and I'd love to get your viewpoint.
I feel like we are that stupid, but go ahead.
Yeah, you might be right. St. Patrick's Day. Anyway, so the Google, something like 50% of all actions or all time over a certain amount of time on the internet touches a Google property. And so they can start grabbing data from your actions and use behavioral data on Gmail, on their browser, on search, obviously, on Android. A cookie is a chance to follow you around the internet. And if the New York Times and you show up and they've put a cookie on your browser and you show back up to the New York Times, they know you're at the Audi site and they can start running you Audi ads as you're reading, you know, or reading Kara Swisher's column. And they can get more money for those ads and they can monetize their traffic to a greater extent as a function of cookie technology. If effectively Google starts clearing cookies anytime someone comes to one of their properties, then what they're saying is, all right, we have the scale to touch almost everybody every time they're on the internet, and we're going to reduce your ability. So basically, this is just nothing but a transfer of power from everyone that doesn't have 50% of all activity on the internet to Google. So the notion that this reflects in any way anything other than just them leveraging their monopoly power, if you want evidence for antitrust, this is it. This isn't an attempt to avoid antitrust. This is exhibit C of why Google should be broken up, in my view.
Oh, interesting. Well, you know, interesting, the reactions from the ad industry are all over the place. You know, some say that if they can't target or get a detailed, this is from the Journal, after Google's change, advertisers won't be able to get a detailed picture of people's, the targeted users went on to buy and advertise products. Still, other industry executives said the change is good for consumers and expressed hope that Google's new targeting technologies will still help brands achieve their goals in online marketing. And so it really is interesting because I think they have to act in some way so that it looks that they care about privacy, whether putting, you know, there's a thing where they've been working on a thing called a privacy sandbox, which they target ads without collecting individual information.
Mm-hmm.
They group people together
as cohorts
and stuff like Google that.
Which, search works that way, doesn't it?
They claim they don't know you. They scrub
your identity and then group you.
And so I think there's a real tension in the industry right now around these issues. And so I think this move is the right thing for them to at least be communicating. This is their story, their narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And there are Sridhar, who ran a lot of their ad products, has started a company called Neva, which is doing stuff like that. So there's all kinds
of
interesting—
Spoke to him last night because of you.
Yes, that's right. And so I think that, what do you think of that idea of what they're doing there?
So I could not be more excited. I think that there is a big opportunity here, the purity play, the citizen play, whether it's Snap or Pinterest accelerating because people see them as a non-toxic social platform, whether it's Twitter stock accelerating when they kick off hate and misinformation in the form of 140 characters known as our president. I think that the immunities are kicking in and people are saying there is a capitalist movement towards a better, healthier ecosystem. And one of the defining features of a healthier ecosystem is subscription as opposed to ad-driven models where it's just about your attention. So if it's just about your attention, you try and convince people on Robinhood that everyone's making money and figure out a way for 85% of them to lose money by trading every goddamn day. If you're on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, let's train you to be divided, be angry, and rage you so you keep showing up and commenting and getting angry, or convince you that everyone's better looking than you and you should be shamed and get some sort of weird sort of fake relevance. So the idea that a search engine could be launched that's subscription-based and will actually take you to the best information as opposed to the information they can further monetize or enrage you with, I think is the future of search. And this guy has the chops. I don't think he's thinking big enough. I think he should go to, and I think there's an opportunity here, go to the best content creators in the world, whether it's the New York Times or Condé Nast or News Corp or Pearson or Nikkei, and say, you've seen what happened to you. Google partners with media companies the way a virus partners with a host. Go in all in with us and take all that shit off of Google. Make Google the sewer it deserves to be in terms of content and go exclusive with us. So Neva to me is a super exciting company.
You've
got to
get people using it. You know, people are so used.
Google is such a practice.
It's such a thing. It's like oxygen in so many ways. What's interesting is, according to the Journal on this, is correct that the company said its announcement on Wednesday only covers its ad tools and unique identifiers for websites, not mobile apps, which is, of course, where a lot of the action is happening. So a big slice of the digital ad ecosystem wouldn't be affected. Mobile ad spending accounted for 68% of all digital spending in the U.S. So that's one issue. But meanwhile, Apple plans to limit tracking of app usage required by developers to get opt-in permission. So there's a squeeze going on there. It would be interesting if Google embraced it the same way.
And then did you see the Facebook, the Facebook almost never sends messages
out. None of this is good for Facebook.
And then Facebook sent out a message saying, we stand with small business. This is an assault on small business. Thank God for Facebook protecting small business.
Yeah.
Thank God they're here for us.
This is something. Facebook's going to get a squeeze here. I'm feeling a squeeze.
They're all going after each other now.
Ideally, which is good. Competition is good. I think it's great. Google shareholders will be interesting. I think probably it doesn't affect their money a lot, and they can still do first party data on people that use their stuff, as long as they get the permission to do so. And of course, it's all opt out, not opt in. And they have a lot of services like YouTube and others that collect something called first party data, and that's that works rather well for them. A combination of this cohorts and then first party data, they've still got it covered. Google's going to be just fine, kids, just so you know.
As long as Pinterest acquires the rights to Michael Bolton, I think that's the gangster technology move that we've all been waiting for.
Maybe Jack will buy Pinterest for Square.
Seriously?
That one makes more sense because they sell
shit. Anything makes more sense.
That one makes more sense.
It would make
it?
More sense if you and I acquired the rights to George Michael music. I mean, by the way, genius. That guy's a genius.
I love George Michael.
Oh, my gosh. Literally all my favorite artists are dying from opioid overdose. So George Michael, Tom Petty. If I were REM, I would not leave the house right now. Every one of my favorite artists are dropping dead from opioid overdoses.
Okay. I'm sorry, Scott. Okay. He's going to buy something like Pinterest. That makes more sense. Pinterest by Square, that makes more sense.
Pinterest
by
Square?
No, Square buys Pinterest.
Do you realize Square is worth more than Goldman Sachs right now?
Yes, you told me that. I know. And you are going to get that turned around.
I'm telling you again.
You're going to get that turned around. Okay, we're going to go on a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about implosions of the entertainment industry, and we'll take a listener mail question.
Support for Vivid comes from the Optimistic Outlook podcast. What can a microgrid on Chicago's South Side teach us about the future of energy? How can we fight to make clean air a basic human right? And why are there almost a million open manufacturing jobs right now? There's only a few people in the world with the expertise, access, and perspective to give real answers to those questions. And Barbara Humpton, the CEO of Siemens USA, is one of them. On her podcast, The Optimistic Outlook, you get a seat at the table with Barbara as she shares the latest insights on breakthroughs in manufacturing technologies that are reshaping our reality. Barbara's guests include thought leaders, industry mavericks, and researchers who all share actionable information and ideas about the technologies that are creating our future. Recent episodes highlight how new technology paired with sustainability efforts has radically changed workplaces across the spectrum, from hospitals and energy plants to transportation systems. Other fascinating topics include sustainable beer brewing, the power of 3D printing, and the incredible potential of self-healing concrete. To learn more, join the dozens and dozens of people who tune into this podcast. Listen to The Optimistic Outlook wherever you consume your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Okay, Scott, we're back. Okay, look, it's not all Jay-Z and Jack hanging sweet hanging. Let's talk about more troubles for the entertainment industry and where we go from here. My favorite movie chain experience is ruined. The Alamo Drafthouse movie theater chain has filed Chapter 11. This is a movie theater chain that's been struggling during the pandemic, and obviously so, because it's a real experiential thing where you go and eat in the theater and they have food and then you watch movies and beautiful seats, et cetera, et cetera. They'll continue to operate, but have been acquired by Altamont Capital Partners, which frightens me in some way. I don't even know. I assume a hedge fund. Meanwhile, the Golden Globes viewership sunk to record lows. Globe ratings plummeted more than 60% from the 18.3 million viewers last year to an audience of 6.9 million. So people tend to like television experiences. So I think they'll probably jump back next year and then go drinking. That's what they do. They do these sort of drank fests that they entertain people at. But what do you think about the Alamo thing? We were talking about how different differentiate the movie theater experience. And I still think movie theaters are screwed, as I've said before. What do you think about this?
Well, first of all, Altamont Capital Partners, doesn't that sound like you go to meet with Altamont and then all of a sudden the elevator turns dark and you plummet to some unknown floor and they grab you and harvest your organs?
Sharks.
That's seriously, that
like, you know, like
so
a Bond
sinister.
Shark.
Welcome to Altamont, where the future is yours.
Let me say, allegedly, okay. They have elevators with it.
Okay.
You know what? They're a very nice company. They do not have elevators with the floors.
I'm sure they're lovely people.
They do not harvest organs.
Altamont Capital
Partners.
Let me
just say,
let me guess
that
a bunch
a
of
joke.
White dudes.
That
going
was
out
satire.
On a limb here.
I'm just trying to protect us legally. That
there's
was satire.
Me my, there's me and my identity politics.
They are.
Know nothing about them. Making stereotypes.
They do
stereotypes
not have sharks
make.
At the bottom of elevators. Go ahead.
Okay. Live and Let Die, Roger Moore. Fantastic
remember that?
Film.
And he put his feet at the edges because he
and
knew
the guy
that,
from 7-Up, Mr. Bond.
Mr. Bond.
With the alligators running over the Anyway, back to this.
Okay,
This is the biggest jump over the biggest shark I have ever seen in media.
Meaning?
Okay, Golden Globe viewership was off 62% this year. You know how much you loved it? That would make you one of seven people who love the Golden Globes.
No, I
the
like the whole thing.
The viewership was down.
I know that. Of course, it was down.
I didn't.
I know. I like some of the moments.
Everyone's panicked.
I like Jodie Foster making out with her wife, stuff like that. But go ahead.
Everyone's panicked that the Super Bowl was down 8% viewership. The Golden Globes were down, and everybody said, "Oh, broadcast TV, ad-supported television, will always have live events and sports." Well, guess what? That wall has been breached. The Golden Globes off 62%.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Percent, and then
people like that show. People like it and they don't like the new show.
And then what do we have? The other point of distribution for the media industrial complex, the film industrial complex, the movie theaters. Remember we had Mark Cuban, I was like, oh no, movie theaters are great. They just need to evolve. And everyone uses the same thing. Alamo Drafthouse, bankrupt. IPIC, which I love, bankrupt. And here's the thing, Kara, here's the thing.
I'm going to
tie this to today's news.
Okay.
All right, Paramount Plus announced is launching
today.
Yes,
I saw that. Yeah.
Okay, so you got Jean-Luc Picard.
Right.
You got Trevor Noah. Mm-hmm. You got Lionel Messi. They have the Premier League games. And you have SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yeah.
For $6 a month. So the cost to go to Alamo for one night, that's at least 70 or 75 bucks. Or you can have Lionel Messi and Starship Commander Jean-Luc Picard for a year.
I don't think it's a big business, but it's a small business in a non-pandemic environment. I don't think it's going to kill it. I think if they just my idea was that all movie theaters are going to contract to small businesses. But go ahead, move on.
Well, look, there's still places where you can rent movies on video cassette. You will see that business will go through a Chapter 11. Retail is essentially a retail play. And retail was invented for Chapter 11 because you get to go through and cherry pick the Alamos that are actually working.
Right.
And they get an excuse to cut costs, get out of bad leases. It will come back. But my guess is, and I hate to say this, I think Alamo and every other theater, that could be a Chapter 22. And that is, it could come out and go back in. IPIC here in Delray, by the way.
There's no such thing as Chapter 22, but go ahead.
Well, that's a finance term for insiders when you go Chapter 11 twice. Jay-Z knows what that means. Jay-Z knows what that means.
I can multiply. I can divide. Go ahead.
Anyways, we have an IPIC here in Delray, and I
explain
love
what IPIC is for those who don't
know.
Well,
IPIC is basically you go to a movie theater, and they let you watch in a Lazy Boy, and they bring you Zacapa and Cokes. It's heaven. I'll tell you what it is. It's heaven. I started taking the kids to see kids' movies there. I hate kids' movies more than anything.
Really?
And then I realized I probably shouldn't be drinking on outings with my children. Totally a new story. Different story.
Well, we all knew that.
So I stopped doing that. But now when I go to movies, I only go to IPIC. I think it's amazing. And I would pay. They bring you sliders, they bring you alcohol, and you hit this button and you have a Lazy Boy. And I imagine it's probably the same as Alamo. I don't know what Alamo is. Is Alamo the same thing?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Anyways, it's a differentiated premium experience. IPIC went bankrupt before COVID. They couldn't figure it out before COVID, and everyone loves it. But here's the thing. It's just it goes back to dispersion, and that is the content creators and consumers are pairing up to say,
dispersion.
You know what? We don't need CAA, you know what? We don't need movie theaters to stop that great content from getting to your amazing mm-hmm. living room that, by the way, has innovated like crazy.
Like crazy.
I have a I have this thing called a wallpaper TV. Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's just, anyway, so the dispersion of value to the end consumer is skipping over friction distinct of who it hurts. And whether CAA or the guy directing Batman all want to hold on to the media.
Their high dudgeon gave me a headache after my Jason Kilar interview, I got to say. Gave me a headache.
Look, this is more evidence of dispersion. I think movie theaters are going to be, I mean, they might as well call them Sears at this point. It's just, I think you're going to see a real implosion. What might be interesting is, it'll be interesting to see how they, if and how Alamo comes back. But okay, 62% down the Golden Globes Live. The advertising industrial complex, the movie theater, the film industrial complex is literally collapsing on itself.
Yes. So what happens? I have to say, interestingly, Kara Swisher is going to buy another big screen TV. I have real old TVs.
Well, that's news.
My son has a nice one. But I was like, they don't cost that much. And I really like watching at home. It sounds crazy, but I made kind of a nice
wallpaper.
I like have my food and I can get things delivered. And I was like, you know, but I was wondering what I will go back to after post-vaccine, post-pandemic. And I think I will go to movies, certain movies, like one that I want to see on a big screen.
Less and less, Kara.
It was already happening. But which movies will I want to see on a big screen? Like probably Top Gun, like, or something like that.
I don't think, you know what it is? I don't think you're going to go to movies for the movie. I think you're going to go to movies for the people. And that is, your kids will get excited about something. It's a chance to get your kids out of the
house.
My
kids do not like movie theaters. My son never
goes. People with children. And when your daughter gets a little bit older, you'll take her to see cute movies for the experience. And not only that, how we see movies, we go with groups of friends and we go see Queen all together and we wear white t-shirts. It's white tank tops because we're that kind of crazy fun people. And then we go back and have a key party because we're bored and live in the suburbs. But beyond that.
Key party. You don't have key parties.
There's a 70 reference, 70s reference.
There's a great movie called, with Sigourney Weaver, what's it called? The Ice. Oh, it's really good. It's about a key party. Bad things happen after a key party.
I've actually never been to a key party.
I'm looking it up right now.
Which is very understandable. I have never been invited to a key party, which makes a lot of sense.
Well, why would they invite you to a key party?
That's my joke. That's my humor. Thank you very much.
It's really good. It's one of those set. The Ice Storm. It's by Ang Lee.
Platinum loyalty card holder at Alamo Drafthouse.
Yeah.
We go to movies for people and for experience, no longer for the films. And the Golden Globes, anyways, bottom line is the there's so much value leaking away from the traditional film enterprise, from agencies. I think you're going to see a major agency to go through a restructuring, moving to the streaming platforms. Because think about, my God, I thought Paramount Plus, when I heard it, I was immediately snarky. Oh, God, another streaming platform. We don't need it. There's all these articles saying we have subscription fatigue. No, we don't. Mm-hmm. For $6 a month, it's an amazing deal.
Yeah,
it's an amazing deal.
It's an amazing deal. But then you have a lot of them. That's the issue. Ultimately, it adds up monthly.
There needs to be an operating system on top of it. I think you'll still pay as much.
Consolidation.
Do you know that when asked, there's some really interesting research. When asked what people think they pay for subscriptions, they report on average $84 a month. Do you know how much on average we pay in subscriptions each month?
I don't know.
$230, which means we think we're getting a great value.
Yeah, we do. It's all started with Amazon Prime. I feel good about it still 100%. To this day, and I don't know what I pay.
100%.
Fascinating. All right, this is fascinating. We'll see what happens. I think Alamo Drafthouse will come out. It'll be smaller. It's still a small, like what I was saying about AMC, it's like, look, it's a small business. That's what it is. It's a small business and it's a smaller business going forward. Unless they can come up with some innovation that is so fantastic that maybe, I don't know what it would be, maybe a 3D.
Taking your kidney.
3D.
Taking your kidney. That's the only thing that saves Alamo.
Would you like sliders?
Please flip on your stomach. You'll feel a pinprick in your shoulder.
No, but like 3D. I can see them in virtual reality. I don't know, games. I don't know. I'm not an innovative person, so I don't know. All right, but let's take a listener mail question next.
You've got. I can't believe I'm going to be a mailman.
You've got mail.
Hi, Karen, Scott.
My name is Thomas and I'm 21 years old. I currently work as a software developer for a healthcare startup in Providence, Rhode Island. Due to my circumstance as a foreigner from Taiwan working in the US on my student visa, there's a high chance I will eventually have to seek opportunities elsewhere. Here's my question. What advice would you give a 21-year-old when navigating the tech sector with the hopes to one day start their own business? Additionally, considering that I'm most interested in exploring market opportunities in Taiwan and Japan, what are some principles, in your opinion, that I should follow when adapting existing American solutions to those regions? Thank you for taking the time to answer my question.
This is fascinating. This is interesting. I had this question from a student where I'm doing a seminar at University of Chicago yesterday. They were someone who is on a visa here and wanted to take is interested in fintech. And I said, oh, go to all these different startups. I mentioned Public. I mentioned lots of things. And they said they had to go to a bigger company because of visa problems. And the bigger companies can, like, it was, I'm not going to say where they were going, but it was a big bank that they had a job. And they wanted, I was like, start your own company, do this and that. And then the difficulties, this woman had to make an economic decision based on visa issues. So it'll be interesting to see what happens around visas. But I was always advising people to start their own companies or go to small startups. And that's always my thing. But I had never even thought of this. And this guy has the same visa issue, probably will probably face that. So what do you think?
Well, first off, a 21-year-old that's working in software and healthcare, I'd like to be him.
Yeah,
so I hope that he has the perspective I didn't have at the age of 21 and to recognize how impressive a young man he is and how well he's doing. Look, I'd like to think that with the Biden administration, we are waking up again or reawakening to our superpower, and that is our embrace of immigrants, and that recognizing that 60% of the NASDAQ by market capitalization is run by either recent immigrants or first-generation immigrants, and that to cut off or to not embrace impressive young men like this individual, we're doing nothing but shooting ourselves. Imagine if you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and every season you get your pick of the best college players. You didn't have to go through a draft or a lottery. That's where America is. And for some reason we've decided, no, let's send them to the Las Vegas Raiders, or let's send them to the New England Patriots. I'm hopeful that this young man will have the opportunity to stay
in
America.
See, though.
If
a
he
lot
doesn't,
of people are worried.
To his question, you know, what American values to take to other nations. I sold my first company to Dentsu, a Japanese company. I'm not familiar with Taiwan. But I think one of the reasons America has been so successful is an entrepreneurial culture. It's in our DNA. We're risk takers. The people who came here are risk takers. The people who kept heading west were risk takers. We're not afraid. I don't want to say, everyone says America embraces failure. That's bullshit, but we're not afraid of it. And my advice to this young man is, a lot of people make the mistake of thinking, I need to go get certified or credentialed in order to start a business. I've been starting businesses since I got out of business school. There are no special skills to being an entrepreneur other than a willingness to absorb a lot of risk, a willingness to sell like crazy. Being an entrepreneur is Latin for selling employees, selling investors.
Yeah, you're right.
And also bring what I call an American work ethic. America is about opportunity. It's about generosity. I'd like to think it's about empathy. And it's also about we work. And I've never had a successful company that didn't involve me working around the fucking clock. And
but listen, hustle porn. Let me just tell you something, though.
Hustle
Taiwan's
porn, that
no slouch. That's an expression. Do
that
you know
hurts.
That?
I know. Hustle. I know the whole hustle porn industry. I don't like it.
I know that. Taiwan is no slacker in this area. Look what they've done around COVID. Very innovative.
Well,
you can start a company anywhere
You're putting words in my mouth.
Okay, I'm just saying.
Are you going to accuse me of using the Nazi word again?
Very American. I think there's innovation all over the world. But can I just get to the actual specifics?
We own entrepreneurship. We are the entrepreneurship gangsters.
Absolutely not.
Okay, name a company that's added more than $10 billion in a 12-month period outside.
I get it. You got the European Google thing. You're going to do that.
Outside of China, who's added more than $10 billion in 1 year?
There's a lot of innovation across the world. Anyhow.
Okay. That's a bold statement.
You American exceptionalist hustle porner. Biden's immigration plan, just so you know, this is from his news story, calls for dramatically boosting the number of green cards and expanding other avenues for highly skilled workers, overhauling Trump's ban on HB1 visa bans that were pushing it back. But this is something they've noted. Biden's immigration plan calls for, does this, but House Democrats are weighing piecemeal approach to immigration that would put more popular measures like helping refugees, agricultural workers, and people brought to the United States illegally first, leaving no leverage to push through less popular measures like increasing immigration for skilled workers. And so how they do this is open question, and whether it'll be problematic. And a lot of people think this. And so there's all kinds of legislation going on. There's another figuring out how to overhaul the HB1 visa program is going to be a political struggle too.
I want to be 21 and go to Tokyo and start a business.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty good.
I do too. I think that would be fun.
That sounds like
there's also Matt Gaetz has some HB1 visa plan. I don't even want to know about it.
What?
I know he does. Let me read this. Three American lawmakers have introduced legislation in the House of Representatives that stops employers from hiring foreign HB1 visas if they recently or plan to furlough their U.S. workers. That's going to be the fight. Like, if you don't hire U.S. workers, and requires employers to pay for HB1 workers more than their American workers. Guess who's involved? Mo Brooks, Matt Gaetz, and Lance Gooden, the American Jobs First Act. So there's going to be a struggle here. This is a struggling thing. And so we'll see. I think a lot of, there'll be pressures from tech companies and this and that. But the fact of the matter is, give me your one thing, your biggest advice you would give a young person who wants to start a company, besides working all the time and love and failure. Give me something fresh.
Find great partners. I've never, greatness is in the agency of others. Find someone who has different skills than you. And it's just so much more fun to build great things with other people.
Yes.
And
that's how I feel about you, Scott.
Go on. You mean that. There's a kernel of truth in there. I'm being very serious. Success we have recognized here together is
joint.
More fun because we recognize it together.
Yep.
No, it's, I would just say, if you asked me for one piece of advice. My first partner.
That is a good one.
My first partner in profit was this incredibly introverted technology guy named Ian Chaplin, who's everything I'm not. He's smart. He's disciplined. He understands technology. He's very practical. When we sold our first e-commerce company, Aardvark, a pet company, I wanted to take all stock from this amazing company called Petopia that was clearly going to the moon. And he's like, no, let's take half in cash, Scott.
Yeah.
Just trust me on this one. Let's take half in cash. Yeah. And the thing was bankrupt within 7 months. Find someone who looks,
smart.
Smells, and feels differently than you. Different background.
That's a nice idea. You know, I recently interviewed Blair Braverman, who does dog mushing and different things like that. She does a lot of wilderness things. She's an adventurer. And I said, what would you take out if you could only take one thing into the wilderness? And I assumed she would say a giant knife or something like that. And she said a person.
Yeah, someone
Another
else.
Person. I said a giant knife, but yes. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's interesting. I think you're right. I think on that note, that lovely note, we will end that one. And so we're going to take one more quick break and we'll be back for predictions.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docuspecial on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
Okay, Scott, prediction time. Once again, I'm going to give you credit. You predicted that Roku will make acquisitions this year. This week, Roku acquired Nielsen's video advertising business. I don't even understand this, another one. But they did not acquire Tidal. That's all I know.
Oh my God.
The acquisition means that Roku will acquire Nielsen's automatic content recognition and dynamic ad insertion technology, which is basically just means better targeted ads. There's a lot of companies I've noticed lately that are going to try to compete with Nielsen. There's all kinds of things happening in that regard. So what does it mean for Roku's future? Explain this to me, person who would understand it, which I do not.
Well, I don't know the specifics around the synergy or lack thereof. My prediction was simple, and that is Shopify and Roku are the new are have such incredible valuations on their companies right now that mm-hmm. they should.
Yeah, why not?
Free and they're money. Smart. They should go shopping mm-hmm. and start going vertical, either upstream or downstream into content, or upstream mm-hmm. into ad tools.
Right.
But Roku and Shopify are arguably two of the most innovative companies of the last 10 years. And the weird thing, the amazing thing about the stock market, and the reason why market volatility and Robinhood is such a threat to our economy, Goldman Sachs, why the fuck are you taking them public? Anyways, different story, is that with a really healthy NASDAQ, the ability to help people envision the future and then pull the capital forward such that they can make the future happen is just mm-hmm. an incredible advantage that America has. In America, an individual and a team can say, we see this future, and it is so bold and it is so audacious, and we have something called the NASDAQ that says, you know what? If that vision is that exciting, we'll give you the capital to pull the future forward. Mm-hmm. And Shopify.
So these are the two companies. So what else should they buy then? I mean, is that enough? Like, no.
I think Shopify.
So they make a prediction on that.
So I've made the prediction. I think Shopify should buy FedEx or a fulfillment company. I think they should go toe-to-toe with Amazon.
Because Amazon can't buy that company, right? Amazon is going
to
get
Well, Amazon doesn't need to. Amazon has built their own FedEx.
Right. Okay.
So I think but the prediction was you're just going to see some gangster, fairly significant acquisitions. If I were an investment bank, I would just mm-hmm. be presenting Shopify and Roku with ideas all day long.
All right. So FedEx for Shopify. What else? Give me something else for Shopify.
I don't know. I think that they could get into the business of brick and mortar retail by going in and buying. If I were Shopify, I would take a hard look at Kohl's and use Kohl's more as well-staffed, well-lit warehouses. Mm-hmm. And Kohl's trades at a fraction of its value. And Kohl's has fantastic people. They have great human capital. They have great e-commerce. Mm-hmm. They're just in a shitty business right now. And that is selling big box, not big box, but selling other people's brands.
Yeah.
So that would be accretive from both for real estate, accretive for both human capital. I think there's a bunch of opportunities.
I know it's owned by
Target. I think that would be too big a bite. Target's stock has accelerated, and I don't think they could afford Target.
Used to be such an innovative store. I was just in it the other day, and I thought, something's wrong here.
Target? Yeah. I love the Super Target and Boca.
No, I haven't been to the Super. I see I'm in City Targets, I guess. They're not quite. I just was always excited by a Target, and now I've been in several that I'm like, it just feels like it needs a refresh. That's my feeling. And then Roku, besides Nielsen, what should they buy?
I don't know. I don't have what I'd call a strong view on Roku.
Yeah, but you're just like, go buy something. What?
You're going to force me here. If I were Roku, I would think about starting to pick off the best parts of WPP, IPG, Publicy, and Omnicom that are now mm-hmm. a shadow of their former selves. I'd find the most data-driven, interesting agencies that have amazing relationships mm-hmm. and amazing human capital and go in and say, hey, WPP, I will buy Xaxis, or whatever it's called, shitty name, XAXIS. Mm-hmm. These agencies all have buried within them some fantastic companies with fantastic people that are trading at a fraction of their worth because they're trapped in the corpus of a shitty business called the advertising industrial complex, where everyone mm-hmm. says, okay, we're running ads on something, viewership is declining 62%, the Golden Globes. Mm-hmm. So I would get out my pencils and I would go to the big agency conglomerates and start picking off.
That. So there's nobody, no more parties next year, are there? Like,
oh, yeah.
Con.
They'll just be thrown by Facebook, though.
Oh, you're right. I've been to that party.
Mark Benioff does great parties. I love Salesforce parties.
Yeah.
They're
he
nice.
Does. He does.
Those are good parties.
He's.
They're not dirty anymore, though.
Let's
they used to be dirty.
Want to have Mark Benioff on? I was just texting with him the other night about headquarters.
I bet you were. I was.
He texted me about something. Let me just tell you, we should have him on to talk about headquarters.
I love that Mark on.
You know, remember you said if Mark Benioff leaves San Francisco?
My favorite image ever mm-hmm. was that B-roll of you walking around Salesforce headquarters next to him. You guys look like a different species. I mean, seriously,
he's a big guy.
He is, I think that's the most successful big person I know.
Yeah.
He went to USC. Don't hold out against him. I like Mark a lot.
Yeah. That would be right. I asked him if he was going to leave, and he wrote, I go, are you going to leave San Francisco? And I said, and he was teasing me, and he goes, I wonder if Salesforce left California. He goes, we already left, found an amazing new headquarter. We call it the cloud.
Touche, Mark.
He's not going to leave San Francisco.
So want to hear my prediction?
Huge towers in San Francisco, Tokyo, Indianapolis, Chicago, New York, Atlanta, Dublin, and thing. But my heart will always be in San Francisco. Thank you.
Dublin, St. Patrick's Day. There you go.
Yeah.
So my prediction, I think there's something to, I'm fascinated by this wealth tax that
Elizabeth Warren's back with them.
Senator Warren. Here's the thing. I don't think it happens, because if you look at the history of wealth taxes, if they're annual, they'd end up not working, because very smart, talented billionaires are the most mobile people in the world. And Bernard Arnault just moves to Belgium. And it's very hard. These are individuals who are like, you know, I have a really nice life and I travel a lot anyway, so I'll just kind of headquarter or establish residence in London. A capital, especially human capital, when people are exceptionally wealthy, are the most mobile people in the world. And then Elizabeth Warren says, well, when asked about that, says, well, I'll impose a 40% exit tax. And there's something uncomfortable that strikes at what is one of our advantages, and that is America and Britain have very strong private property laws. And at some point, and quite frankly, I think Senator Warren and Senator Sanders are like, you know, you've been in Senate long enough. You're the ones that created some of this income inequality. You controlled all three houses, branches of government, and you couldn't figure out a tax policy that didn't create incredible income inequality. And now you want to go kind of Robin Hood people's private capital. So I think a one-time wealth tax because of the pandemic might make sense. An annual one is not only, I'm not even sure it's the right thing.
I said a temporary one.
Yeah, a one-time thing. We did a super tax on oil companies. Anyways, but a wealth tax, and this goes to my prediction, I think we're going to hear more discussion about, if you think about it, you need taxes to defend our borders. You need it to create a society with connective tissue, redistribute income, protect our parks, et cetera, protect people, protect the country, protect our borders, encourage investment, infrastructure, you know, X, Y, Z. Most of that happens at a state level. And I think the real crisis here, and what will be interesting and get more attention, is that if you were to take the 10,000 people with the largest unrecognized capital gains, they are all moving to Texas and California, they're all moving to Texas and Florida, A, because Texas and Florida are wonderful, but B, it's like they're engaged in massive tax avoidance. And that is, if my SPAC just went public and I'm sitting on a $400 million gain, I can save $50 million by moving to Miami, and Miami's pretty awesome. You're going to see, and this would be, I think, the way to go, some sort of tax, and I think this would be more equitable, that says, if you spend 20 years in New York taking advantage of our roads, recruiting from the finest university system in the world, the University of California, leveraging our infrastructure, and you create a company worth $3 billion, and your share of that is $800 million, and you have benefited from the extraordinary infrastructure and the taxpayers of California, you can't just peace out for 11 months.
You cannot. You're right.
And then avoid all those taxes and not reinvest back in the infrastructure that you have leveraged and benefited from. So I think the more interesting conversation we're going to start to have is some sort of what I'll call value accretion tax. And that is, you can't do an Elon Musk and add the GDP of Hungary to your net worth and leverage the town of Alameda, leverage the incredible innovation that the Bay Area brings, leverage, again, Cal State, University of California, and then all of a sudden decide you got a hankering for Texas. So I don't think a wealth tax,
billionaire Len Cooperman, this is from, told CNBC that he thought the idea has no merit. It's foolish. It's probably not legal. If a wealth tax passes, go out and buy yourself some gold, because people are going to rush to find ways to cheat, to hiding their wealth, essentially. He wants to do a progressive income tax. I believe rich people should pay more. The question is, we have to coalesce around as a nation. What should the maximum tax rate be on wealthy people? Because that will define the revenue yield for the government.
Get rid of capital gains. But there's something around the new gangster tax avoidance, intrastate tax avoidance.
Because other states, like, don't have to wear masks here, move here. You don't have to pay taxes here, move here. It's a real dog eat dog kind of thing.
But what you want is, you want taxation that foots to externalities and where people make their money. And if people are making their money in a state and leveraging the investment those taxpayers and that government are making, You should pay taxes there.
Yeah.
And so it's, I think we're going to start to talk about what I'll call a value accretion tax, a VAT, yeah, if you will, that says, all right, you made all your money, you made all your money, you added, you benefited from the infrastructure and the high taxes of
the innovation of the government.
Yeah, of New York.
I just interviewed a very famous economist, Mariana Mazzucato.
She's not that famous. She's not that famous.
Yeah, who? She is, though.
What's her name?
She's working with a lot of people. She's working with a lot. Her name's, she wrote lots of books, The Entrepreneurial State. One of her arguments is that Apple benefited from all kinds of government, and it's a really interesting idea that the government has to sign better deals with businesses innovation.
You mean not let Apple create a P.O. box in the Isle of Man and
issue
their IP? Not
just that, is that Apple benefited from GPS, benefited from this, all these government investments,
DARPA,
and put it together, DARPA, and then government has to sign better contracts with these people or be part of the innovation moonshots. Like, we should put them behind and have a piece of it. Anyway, this is a very fascinating, I think this dog won't hunt, as they say, with the wealth tax, but there are innovative ways to do taxing. There is, and it's not bad, and it's not socialist, it's not this or that, it's just this one's not going anywhere.
I think you're right.
And it's, you know, I like that Elizabeth Warren is saying they have to pay their fair share. That's a thing she always says. I don't know if you listen to her. That's her little refrain over and over. It's not a little refrain. It's a big refrain. And that's her sort of rallying cry. But how they pay their fair share should be, this is not the way it's going to happen.
She embodies the best and the worst things about progressives. And I include that. I'd like to think of myself as a progressive. She's right. And she's ineffective.
Are wrong in execution.
She's absolutely right. Billionaires should pay more, and she's ineffective.
Yeah.
And you know what? Her and Charles Schumer and Senator Sanders, inspiring. I agree with them, and they're ineffective.
Yeah.
The $15 an hour we wanted in, fine, and we end up with $7.25.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't figure out a way to get Joe Manchin to agree to 11 or 12.
Yeah.
Great. Great. Yeah. You're right. You're right. It's a travesty, and here we are at 7.25.
High dudgeon's not going to work these days. You got to really just get shit done. That's what I say.
GSD. GSD.
Get shit done. That's what we do.
Thank God for the joy and emotional reward you recognize from our partnership. Thank God. Thank God.
I'm sorry, but I got to tell you, though, I'm going to work for Tidal now in Square. I don't even know what they're doing. Oh, my God.
Does that make...
No. Let's just get back to that. What? Just say what?
Seriously.
All right. Seriously, Jack. Anyway, we'll be back on Tuesday. We have Kevin Roos on Monday talking to us about his new book, Future Shock. I want to say it just like that with lots of exclamation points. He's going to talk about that, and we will talk about these issues and stuff like that.
Maybe
he can explain Tidal to
us. We'll also talk about the SPAC that you and I are forming,
proceeds
of which we will use to buy the lifetime rights of Tom Petty, the greatest American rock and roll artist ever.
You know, why don't we do like a total scam like The Sting and start a SPAC and then just run away with all the money and see if they can catch us? What do you think?
Yeah,
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, that sounds. I like the idea.
Let's do like a fire festival for SPACs.
I like the idea of being A, on the run, and B, being on the run with Kara Swisher.
Yeah, stay at very nice hotels.
That would last. We're smuggled out of Tokyo in a music box of trombones.
Because we're not unusual looking. What a pair we would make on the run.
We'll hold up with Carlos Ghosn in Lebanon. And I'll be like, Jesus Christ, this partnership didn't work out well.
I think we should start a SPAC. I think we should start a coin. I think we should start a SPAC. I know you're involved in SPACs.
I am involved in SPACs.
You and Joanna Coles are spacking it up behind my back.
Joanne's a gangster.
Smart. You're a spacker. She texted me the other day. She's like, my second SPAC. I'm like, what do you mean your second? When did you get a second SPAC? Oh, everyone
she's
has a SPAC.
Joanna's smart.
My friend Joanna has a everyone has a SPAC. But Kara
Swisher. On my personal advisory board. If I have a big decision to make, I call Joanna.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm.
She's also given to it. I mean, I call her for bigger decisions than this, but one of the decisions I've called her about is I need a fashion makeover.
Yeah,
I'm in I'm in this stage where I just have absolutely no sense of fashion identity.
Yeah.
That's the bad news. The good news is I think I'm going to grow out of it in about 30 or 40 years.
Yeah.
I would describe
my
fashion sense.
Her. You're going to be decked out in leather when this pandemic ends, and that's not going to be a good
situation
for any of us.
Well, my fashion sense could be described as aging skateboarder.
Yeah.
And I need to move to something else, and she's helping me. She's helping me. Her and George Hahn are going to dress me.
Oh, George Hahn. That's good.
Yeah.
Well,
they're going to dress
me. People. I don't know, Scott. I think you should stick with what you know. I have the same shoes from high school.
That's the problem.
I have this. I stick with the same exact thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
I never change. Yeah, it's good. It's a good look, and I like it.
I'm not sure your fashion sense works for me. I'm not sure it works for you, and I'm sure it doesn't work for me.
Modified teenage boy. That's how I dress too.
11-year-old boy.
11-year-old boy. I'm actually wearing my kid's 11-year-old boy t-shirts right now.
That's sweet.
Okay, it's just I like them. They're nice. They're from Target, speaking of which. Nice. Anyway, we'll be back on Tuesday. Go to nymag.com/pivot to submit your questions for the podcast. The link is also in our show notes. Scott, read us out.
Today's show was produced by Rebecca Sinanis. Ernie Indratut engineered this episode. Thanks also to Hannah Rosen and Drew Burrows. Make sure you subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts. If you're an Android user, check us out on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you like the show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Pivot from New York Magazine and Vox Media. We'll be back next week for a breakdown of all things tech and business. Title acquired by Square. Yeah, that just makes a hell of a lot of sense.
Just a lot of sense, Jack.
Way to go. Hey, Twitter board, wake the fuck up and show up with a big question mark at the next board meeting.
They won't.